You're listening to Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family. Welcome to Sleep Stories for Equestrians. I'm your host, Ashley Winch. We're so happy you're here to relax and unwind. If you fall asleep and miss the story, we will recap it at the beginning of the next episode. We've also selected and edited these stories for ultimate relaxation, removing any stressful bits without affecting the story's integrity, so you can focus on drifting off to sleep. With that, let's settle down and prepare for our story. The gates are closed. The horses sleep. The day's work done. The chores complete. Now let us rest, our bodies and minds. Drift off to sleep and close your eyes. It's time for us to turn down for the night. Now let's breathe in, breathe out, and turn off the light. One more time, breathe out, breathe in. Now, let us begin. On the last episode of Sleep Stories for Equestrians, Elf was driven by people that were not her master and learned many a lessons. Let's begin Chapter 5, Introducing Invicta and Barney. A short time after the unpleasant experience I told you about, I had a long talk with my friend Invicta and learned a lot of useful information from her. She is 2 years older than I am and had been at the horse show in London the year before. She was shown in the novice class for trotters, that is, a class for horses which have never won a prize. Invicta got the first prize, and this fact made her very proud of herself, and she loved talking to me about it. I was a patient listener and anxious to learn all I could about shows and prizes, and so Invicta naturally liked talking to me. I asked her if she had ever won a prize for driving horses, and she explained that she could not be shown in any of these classes because her tail is long. And she also told me that only horses whose tails have been chopped very short are allowed to take part in driving competitions. I wondered why neither my master nor Invicta had had our tails cut short. Mine nearly touches the ground, as you can see from my picture, and Invicta's actually lies 2 inches on it when she stands still. So, I said to Invicta, "Do you know why your master has not had your tail cut when having it long prevents you from being shown in classes, in which I am sure you would more often than not win a first prize?" "Oh yes, I should just think I do know," said Invicta. "For my master thinks it is most cruel to chop off a horse's tail, and thus deprive him of a natural and efficient protection from flies, which are such a pest and torment to him as soon as ever the weather begins to grow the least bit warm. Besides," continued Invicta, "the pain of having the tail chopped, or docked, as it is really called, is so dreadful, and that the terrible memory of the operation never leaves a horse who has gone through it. You ask our friend the Dandy to tell you about docking the next time you see him, for he can speak from bitter experience. His mistress, Lady Durand, thinks both he and poor Zarina look awfully smart with their little stumps, all that's left now of their once beautiful tails." I had always thought the Dandy's tail was very unbecoming, but I had no idea until Invicta, and afterwards he himself told me the suffering he had been compelled to go through to obtain such a hideous, for it really was hideous, result. Just fancy, readers, having to bear being tortured to produce not only disfigurement, but misery and pain for the rest of life. I made up my mind to question the dandy the very next time I saw him, and I thanked Invicta for what she had told me. I felt I was old enough now to know more about the horse world than I could ever learn in my sheltered, happy home with the best and most humane of masters. Soon after this, Invicta's master appeared and drove her off, and mine came to take me out for my usual morning training. I went very well that day, in spite of a mind full of what I had just heard, and after a short time, Master let me saunter lazily down the road, for it was a hot and tiring day. As we went slowly, we met a dear little girl, and I noticed that she was eating a bun. Being very fond of children, I went as close to her as I could and neighed. This always delights children, and they tell each other that I am talking, and so I am. If they are pleased eating bread or butter or cake, I neigh, "Please spare me a little piece," and they always hand out a generous half. This I take very gently, and as soon as my mouth is empty, I neigh again, and this time I say, "Thank you very much, little friends." The children are scarcely ever afraid when I make advances on them, but sometimes the grown-ups with them are, as you will gather from what I am now going to tell you about the little girl with the bun. When I advanced toward the child, she put out a tiny hand and gently stroked my nose, which she could just reach, and then, in answer to my neigh, "Please give me a little piece," she handed me all that was left of the bun. I was just going to take it when I heard a loud, frightened voice call out, "Don't, Miss Marjorie, don't do that. The horse will bite you." And a nurse, wheeling a perambulator, rushed up and hastily drew the child and bun away. Master apologized, and I looked reproachfully at the nurse. I didn't mind about not having the bun, but I did mind very much that anyone should think I would ever hurt a little child. Marjorie noticed my sad expression and said, with a "Please let me, Nanny," she once more held towards me the piece of bun. Master told the nurse about my fondness for little humans, and when she saw how very gently I took the bun from Marjorie, she grew quite brave and even ventured to stroke my neck herself. Marjorie patted me with her little hands, and when once or twice I licked them, she cried out joyfully, "Nanny, the dear horse are tissing me." Then the baby awoke, and sitting up in his perambulator, he stretched out two chubby hands toward me and lisped, "Baba tiss dee dee. Papa wantis, dee dee." And he would not be satisfied until the nurse lifted him into her arms and let him stroke me, or rather, should I say, embrace me. The dear little man didn't know what fear meant, and after hanging on my neck for a few minutes, he pushed one fat little hand right into my mouth and caught a hold of my forelock with the other and tugged at it vigorously, cooing loudly, the while in blissful satisfaction at his achievements. Marjorie gently unclasped the tight little fingers which had now caught hold of my long mane, and then, very reluctantly, baby allowed himself to be put back into the pram, and with a great waving of hands, my little friends went on their way, and Master took me home. When we reached the stable, we found Ricketts and two or three of the other men in a great state of excitement. Ricketts held an empty pie dish in his hand, and he was gazing in astonished amazement at Barney, Master's favorite black retriever, who is wagging his tail vigorously and looking both important and pleased with himself. "What is it, Ricketts?" asked Master. "Well, sir," said the man, "I was very busy this morning, and I quite forgot about poor Barney's dinner. I generally go to the tool shed to fetch this here pie dish about 12 o'clock, and Barney always goes with me to get it and follows me to the kitchen to ask to cook his dinner. As I said, I quite forgot the dog this morning, and so, I suppose, poor Barney got tired of waiting, for cook says at about 12:15, Barney appeared at the kitchen door carrying this pie dish in his mouth. He placed it down before her, as he had seen me do, and waited for her to fill it with scraps, and then very carefully took it between his teeth and marched off to the yard again and enjoyed his dinner. I was just telling the men about Barney's cleverness when you appeared, sir," said Ricketts. Master was deeply interested in all Ricketts told him, and for several days he took up a position in the tool shed where he could see Barney but not be seen, and watch the dog perform his clever trick. The dog always waited for Ricketts until well after 12, and then, when he did not appear, as it was arranged he should not, Master saw Barney put one paw on the dish to tilt it up and take it in his mouth and march off to the kitchen to ask cook for his dinner. And you may be sure his silent, eloquent appeal never passed unnoticed, for cook was just the kindest creature living, and Evelyn was often able to coax dainty morsels out. When Master told Barney's former owner about his clever trick, the man was very much interested and said to Master, "How very curious, for Bruin, Barney's father, did the same trick, and yet Barney never saw him do it. It is a pure case of heredity." Thank you for joining us on Sleep Stories for Equestrians. Allow this soothing music to carry you off to dreamland.